Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Potter in Washington. Today is Monday, April 17, and here are some of the stories we are covering. At least 56 people are killed amid fighting between army and paramilitary forces in Sudan.
I'm calling for the two parties to create a safe passage for all the civilians inside the confrontations area, and especially the journalists who are being stuck from yesterday.
We'll have analysis of the conflict's likely impact on the political transition in Sudan. The International Committee of the Red Cross is expressing deep concern about the fighting. Senegal's main opposition accuses the government of weaponizing the judicial system as opposition leader Sonko goes to court again today, Monday. There was drama on Sunday in the election of governor in Nigeria's Adamawa State.
The recent electoral commissioner is a representative of the commission at the state level, and the powers he purported to exercise are not part of the powers delegated to him by the commission. And so the commission has said that whatever he did is completely null and void, and it will not stand.
And a Zimbabwean actress battling cancer makes an appeal to the wealthy. Those stories plus something O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Doctors in Sudan say at least 56 people are confirmed dead and nearly 600 others injured since clashes between the military and a paramilitary force erupted on Saturday. Medics are appealing for a humanitarian passage for those injured in the violence. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
It was a sleepless night for many Sudanese families and residents of the capital Khartoum and other towns across the country. Heavy gunfire could be heard downtown around Sudan's military headquarters and the presidential palace. Both the military and the Rapid Support Forces group have claimed control of these strategic locations. The Central Committee of the Sudan Doctors tweeted that 600 people sustained injuries and that some are in a critical condition. "We call for an immediate cessation of fighting," the tweet reads. It said the fighting claimed the lives of innocent and armed civilians, and safe passage must be opened to evacuate the detainees, the stranded, and the injured to be provided with medical assistance. Hundreds of people have been caught up in a downtown area since Saturday, including some 250 students at the St. Daniel Kamboni Catholic School in Khartoum. The head of the Sudanese journalist syndicate, Abdul Munem Abu Idris, told VOA via a messaging application that about 12 journalists, including four females, have been stranded in the Sudanese Kuwaiti Business Center since Saturday morning. Abu Idris appealed to the warring parties to create a safe corridor for them to go to their families.
"I'm calling for the two parties to create a safe passage for all the civilians inside the confrontations area, and especially the journalists who are being stuck from yesterday."
The Sudanese Kuwaiti Business Center is located east of the presidential palace along the River Nile. It is a working office space for many media outlets. Abu Idris described the area as a serious confrontation zone between the military and the RSF. He says those journalists and other civilians would be in need of basic items to survive.
"They don't have food, they are not in a safe area because they are inside the area of the exchange affairs. And we are calling also for the Red Crescent to intervene to rescue the civilian and those journalists."
The UN Security Council called on the warring parties to stop fighting and engage in a dialogue to reach an amicable solution. Reports say recent tensions between the army and the RSF stem from disagreements with how the RSF should be integrated into the army and who should oversee that process. It is part of an effort to restore the country to civilian rule and end the political crisis sparked by a military coup in October 2021. The African Union's Peace and Security Council held an extraordinary meeting Sunday in Nairobi to discuss the situation in Sudan. The meeting also appealed to the Sudanese military and RSF leaders to de-escalate confrontation and restore stability. Arab League countries also seriously condemned the fighting in Sudan, calling for calm. Egypt and South Sudan announced in a joint statement their intention to mediate between Sudan's warring parties. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
A Sudan expert says the clashes, which began Saturday between the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Forces Militia, also known as RSF, in the capital Khartoum, is a struggle for power and wealth. Late reports that fighting was continuing on Sunday with about 56 people killed and 600 wounded as both sides clash in the capital Khartoum and other cities. The report Sunday quoted the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Sudan, Volker Pettis, as saying that both General Burhan, the commander of the Sudanese Armed Forces, and General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, the commander of the RSF, have agreed to commit to a temporary pause in fighting on humanitarian grounds. Suleiman Baldo is the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. He tells me he doesn't think that any attempt at mediation would work because it appears both generals have branded each other as criminals and might be prepared to fight to the end.
The fighting is a competition for political influence between the leaders of the Sudan Armed Forces, and particularly Lieutenant General Fatahman al-Burhan and leader of the Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Himeti. But behind the Sudanese army, there is a suspicion that loyalists of the former regime of Omar al-Bashir are manipulating the Sudan Armed Forces and their members within the high command of the army to try and crush the Rapid Support, which they see as an obstacle towards their return to power. At the same time, the Rapid Support Forces is claiming suddenly that it is supporting a democratic transition and the return of power to civilians in Sudan so that it can have a credible political constituency that otherwise it doesn't possess. It's a struggle for power and wealth between the army and the Rapid Support Forces to expand its political support by drawing, on the case of the army, on loyalists of the former regime, and in the case of the Rapid Support Forces, by raising a slogan that may appeal to the popular resistance to military rule in Sudan.
Suleiman, when we last talked, you mentioned that either the military generals were holding the country hostage. Do you still feel that way?
Well, they were holding the country hostage in the sense that they paralyzed the political process that was initially adhered to by both generals and was progressing towards its conclusion in a final political agreement by virtue of which the entire military establishment, Rapid Support Forces and Army would have exited politics and returned authority to fully mandated civilian authority during the transition. And therefore, the country is now hostage, actually, to this fight between the two.
In the meantime, is there any way to resolve this? Can the African Union get involved or the United Nations? What's the likely end to this?
There have been a lot of efforts of mediation from all parties, including and beginning with Sudanese political actors, Sikkim armed movements that have signed peace agreements with the government of Sudan, groups that are known to be supportive of the military coup, political groups, and also political groups that are leading the fight for a retained full civilian rule, such as the Forces of Freedom and Change, that were the partners of the military establishment in this political process. But also regional powers and international powers try to mediate to prevent this kind of direct armed confrontation. Clearly, they have failed. They will continue their efforts to stop the fighting from spreading further. I don't expect that this will succeed, as they have not succeeded in preempting it from happening in the first place. And as I said, you know, this looks like a fighting to the finish because both generals are saying they're going after, you know, holding the other who they label as criminal and, you know, bringing them to justice. Therefore, they do not see an opportunity for, de-escalating the current fighting.
Suleiman Baldo is the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. You are speaking with us from New Jersey. The International Committee of the Red Cross is expressing deep concern as fighting rages on in Sudan's capital Khartoum and other densely populated towns across the country. ICRC spokesperson in Sudan, Jeremy Mwehu, says the ongoing fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces, or SAF, and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, is also targeting civilian infrastructure and disrupting essential services such as healthcare, water, and power. He tells viewers Nabil Biagio that Sudan's warring parties must protect civilians, allow access to humanitarian assistance, and treat detainees with dignity.
The International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, have published a press release calling on all parties involved in fighting in Sudan to protect civilian populations and also to facilitate the work of humanitarian organizations. Since the fighting erupted yesterday, 15 April, not only in Khartoum, but also in many cities in Sudan, we have realized that it happens in populated cities like Khartoum and other cities. So civilian population are exposed. They are not spared. There are students, for example, who are stuck in schools since yesterday morning. There are people who are traveling at the airport. They are stuck there since yesterday morning. There are those who work in the markets and other places. They are not able to go back to their home. Those who are in hospitals, they can't receive visits from their families. Medical workers, they can't reach the place they work. And humanitarian organizations, they are not in a position, they can't move in the cities to provide humanitarian assistance.
And at ICRC, of course, your work focuses on protection and providing support to victims of violence and of war. And since the fighting is now being carried out in residential neighborhoods with, you know, dense populations, how has that affected your access to civilians?
Absolutely. It affects civilian population. And when it comes to us, International Committee of the Red Cross, main concern, it's about our capacity to move in the cities, our capacity to provide assistance to those who are affected, those who are getting injured, those who are detainees, those who need first aid. This is our main concern, and for all humanitarian organizations.
People I speak with in Khartoum, they report bridges being closed, roads blocked, and people cannot even walk in the streets. So your work must have been really severely restricted.
Absolutely. This is due not only to the fact that bridges are closed, but mostly because there are fighting. There are blasts, there are heavy gunfire. Anytime, even during this interview, if you draw your attention, you can hear heavy gunfire detonations here in Khartoum. So there are fighting happening inside cities. So it's a very horrifying situation for civilian population. They can't move. It's very dangerous for everyone to move, including humanitarian organizations.
Sudan is home to vulnerable groups like refugees from neighboring countries such as South Sudan and Ethiopia. How are they being affected?
So far, I can give you more details, but generally speaking, this situation affects everyone.
That was Jeremy Mwehu, the spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross. He was speaking with VOA's Nabil Biagio. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, April 17. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson Omalley Sports. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, also known as INEC, has been releasing details for its decision to invalidate the election of Aisha Dahiru Binani as governor of Adamawa State. Senator Binani, the candidate for the ruling All Progressives Congress APC party, was the challenger against incumbent governor Amadu Fintiri of the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP. If elected, Binani will be the first elected female governor in Nigeria. Festus Okoye is the National Commissioner in Charge of Information and Voter Education at INEC. He tells me the resident electoral commissioner in Adamawa State exercised powers not delegated to him. He says INEC has suspended further collation of results from Adamawa and summoned the resident commissioner and all officials involved in the debacle to INEC headquarters in Abuja.
The situation is that we have suspended further collation of results for the Adamawa governorship election. And the commission has summoned both the resident electoral commissioner for Adamawa State and the returning officer for the governorship election and the senior staff and national commissioners that superintended the election to Abuja. So when they arrive Abuja, the commission will meet as a commission and then take a position on what will happen next relating to the governorship election.
Well, tell me, is it true, therefore, that the local INEC has declared Binani the governor-elect?
Well, you know, the way our regulations and guidelines operate is that before you can become a collation or returning officer for a governorship election or any of the strands of elections, you must be appointed by the Independent National Electoral Commission at the INEC headquarters. Now, the resident electoral commissioner is a representative of the commission at the state level. And his powers are clearly defined. He exercises powers delegated to him by the commission. And the powers he purported to exercise are not part of the powers delegated to him by the commission. So the commission has said that whatever he did is completely null and void, and it will not stand.
So why has it taken that long to announce the results from Adamawa State?
You know, after the conduct of the governorship election, the election was declared inconclusive. And then we declared that we are going to go and conduct what we call supplementary election in 69 of the polling units in Adamawa State. And that's exactly what took place on Saturday. So it is the results from that supplementary election that was being collated. 10 of the local governments have been collated, remaining the other local governments, before this drama unfolded. Prior to that, the results from the previous election had already been warehoused. So the supplementary results ought to be integrated with the previous one before a declaration is made and before a return is made. We are just following through with our processes and procedures. And we thought that we were going to have a conclusion to the entire process today. Unfortunately, things didn't turn out the way we wanted it.
What's the situation like now in Adamawa State? I mean, how is the security situation there?
The situation is calm. The commission is really, really unhappy and concerned because one of the national commissioners that was deployed to Adamawa State to go and superintend the election was brutalized and was stripped naked. So we've called on the security agencies to fish out those who engage in that particular act and then bring them to justice. But as of now, our main concern is to make sure that we bring the entire governorship election situation to a conclusion. So our appeal is for the people of Adamawa State to remain calm and not to take the laws into their hands, because this commission is a commission of justice, and we will do what the law permits us to do and what the law says we should do. We are going to follow through with our processes and procedures and make sure that everything is done legally, constitutionally, and in accordance with our regulations and our guidelines.
Festus Okoye is the National Commissioner in Charge of Information and Voter Education at Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission. He was speaking with us from Abuja. Senegal's main opposition, the African Patriots of Senegal for Work Ethics and Fraternity, is accusing the government of arbitrarily arresting its Secretary General for, quote, the peaceful expression of its opinion. The party says Bassirou Diomaye Faye was arrested last Friday for expressing his displeasure with the March 30 court decision in which opposition leader Ousmane Sonko was given a 2-month suspended sentence and fined about $332,000 in a libel case brought against him by the country's tourism minister, Mame Mbaye Niang. Today, Monday, Nya is going back to court to say that the $300,000 fine is not enough. Yasin Fall is Vice President for International Relations of Pastel Les Patriots. She tells me that the Senegalese court system has been weaponized to exclude Sonko from contesting next year's presidential election, thereby paving the way for President Macky Sall to seek a third term.
Our Secretary General, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, wrote on his Facebook a post that stated that the magistrates in the court have not followed due process because Mr. Sonko has been asked to pay $200 million so far, which is about $300,000, to Mr. Mamba Nya, and also have been indicted of 2 months without staying in jail. Mr. Sonko and his lawyers have the opportunity, according to the law, to really write back to the court and reply to that and say that whether they agree or whether they're going to ask for the court to be opened again. They were not given those 30 days. What happened was that Mr. Mamba Nya and the procurer went back and said that they were not happy with the verdict. Despite the fact that the day before Mr. Mamba Nya spoke openly on television and radio and said that he was happy with the verdict, the next day he came back and said he wasn't happy. Now, he didn't sue the person who accused him and wrote a book and demonstrated that indeed he did embezzle funds. He's accusing Mr. Sonko. The reason being that if Mr. Sonko is indicted of 6 months, even without going to jail, or 3 months or going to jail, he will not be able to be a candidate because the law says that if you are indicted for 3 months or 6 months without going to jail, you will not be a voter. In Senegal, in order to be a candidate, you have to be a voter.
Does the opposition, or do you believe that Mr. Sonko should get a new trial?
Number one, I believe that the justice system in Senegal has been weaponized politically. So we do not feel like Mr. Sonko is getting fair trial in Senegal. That's the first statement. The second point is Mr. Sonko should get a fair trial with all magistrates that are not involved into any kind of conflict of interest.
Yasin Fall is Vice President for International Relations of Pastel Les Patriots. She was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. World record holder Eliud Kipchoge has the speed to outclass the rest of the field when he makes his Boston Marathon debut on Monday. To win, he may have to slow things down. The two-time Olympic gold medalist and 12-time major marathon champion knows that the 26.2-mile route isn't like those flat and friendly courses where he established himself as perhaps the greatest distance runner of all time. The Kenyan athlete is great, races the Boston Marathon for the first time as he aims to take another step towards his goal of winning all six of the races in the World Marathon Major Series.
My mission is to run a good race, try to win, and come back with good results. Everybody is coming to win. Trust the most prepared and planned person and will take the day.
So far, he has won the London Marathon and Berlin Marathon 4 times each and has also claimed victories in Tokyo and Chicago. That leaves Boston and New York City still to conquer.
Running all the six, trying to win all of them shows that you are really focused.
And out to golf, where all is now set for the 2023 All-Africa Junior Golf Championship as it swings off on Monday at the Lake Victoria Serena Golf Resort and Spa Course in Kigo Wakiso District in Uganda. 15 countries will take part in the tournament. The participating countries include Kenya, Tanzania, Botswana, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, Gabon, Malawi, Mauritius, Namibia, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Tunisia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and host Uganda. The top three teams in each category will qualify to represent Africa in the Toyota World Junior Golf Championship due in Japan. In football news, ahead of the knockout phase of the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederations Cup, the Continental Governing Body is organizing an elite referees course in Cairo to equip referees ahead of the crucial weekends. The course will have 70 participants comprising of 25 referees, 30 assistant referees, 5 video assistant referees, 5 instructors and 2 VAR technicians. The program, which extends over 5 days and will end on Tuesday, the 18th 15th of April will see CAF focus on sharpening the skills of match officials with special emphasis on incidents in the penalty area, offside position, game management, tactical fouls, and handball. In swimming news, South African Olympic Roland Schoeman bagged second place in the 50 meters freestyle at the National Aquatics Championships on Saturday night. After a 7-year hiatus from national contention, 4-time South Africa Olympian Roland Schoeman was thrilled to be back in the pool as he finished behind Peter Kudzi, who is 24 years younger than him, with a time of 22.89 seconds. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, April 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.